Are you a business owner looking for real advice and input? You're in the right place. From concept to launch to growth, funding, and beyond. Welcome to Startup Hustle with your hosts. One once sold a business for $150 million. The other, the author of Million Dollar Bedroom. Here are your hosts of Startup Hustle, Matt DeCourcy and Matt Watson.
And we're back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Matt Watson. Hi, Matt.
I'm ready to do something risky today.
How risky?
I don't know. Genius level risky.
We got the guy for you, man.
Yeah.
So here with us today, we have Chris Cheatham, the CEO and founder of Risk Genius. Hi, Chris.
Hey, what's up?
How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. It's Friday and my wife's gone. So I have the kids all weekend.
Sounds
so
risky.
It's going to get.
Oh, me too. Come on over, man.
Yeah.
Pool party tonight, about 7 o'clock. Come on over.
I've already given them to my parents for the weekend.
So. Oh, so you're alone?
It's a good move.
Just for, yeah, like maybe for tonight.
It's a good move.
And then I got to go pick them up tomorrow.
Good move, man. All right. Good move. Well, Chris, you own a startup here in Kansas City. Recently, were also added to Startland News's top startups to watch in Kansas City. We're a sponsor of the Startup Foundation. Sweet. Love what they do there. And that was actually the first time I had heard you talk about Risk Genius, and it really kind of opened my eyes. And I'll let you say it the best, but you said one thing. You said, yeah, these insurance companies don't even know what's in their own policies. And I was like, what? So anyway, tell us about Risk Genius and what you guys do.
Yeah. We help insurance companies figure out what's in their policies, right? Yeah. So, these commercial insurance policies are big and complex and nasty. And because of the way that states regulate the issue, they're hard to read, right? And so we use software and machine learning to break them down, segment all the data, categorize the data. And then we've created like software modules to serve that information up. So simple way to think about it is like everyone has a checklist that they use when they check the policy. And we've just taken that checklist and brought it into a software application. And then we can take each of those items and find them in the policy with machine learning.
And so this is based on insurance policies that are usually business related?
Yeah. Yeah. Because personal insurance, nobody reads their policy. Nobody cares. Because there's lots of regulators protecting you. That's the main reason. I mean, have you guys read your personal insurance policy?
Yeah. I'm reading it right now.
No. I did last night when I was tired.
Is that how you finally went to sleep?
Yeah. I mean, I read a book to my kids and then they wouldn't sleep. So I just started reading them my insurance policy.
And that put them to sleep.
Yeah.
I bet you couldn't even find your insurance policy right now.
That's
right?
A great point.
Right? Probably
like,
not.
People don't even know how to get them because you have to go find your agent, and then the agent has to call the carrier, and the carrier like has crappy APIs where you're trying to connect. And
that's a good point. It's not like they send you some 50-page document to read.
Well, that's another thing I was going to ask is how long is an average insurance policy? You're probably pretty long.
They are. They're, you know, 50 pages to 150 pages. But then you also, like the brokers out there, I feel very bad for them because they have to take like the quote. There's this insane process in the insurance commercial world where you get a quote and then you get a binder and then you get a policy, and mistakes are made all throughout that process. And if the broker doesn't catch the mistake and then there's a claim made and that mistake affects it, then the broker can get blamed.
So what kind of policies are these usually? Like, what's an example of this type of insurance
that we're talking about? Property. So this building, right? The insurance property or the insurance policy on this building would be a good example. Commercial fleets have big commercial auto policies in place. Basically any business, and like cyber insurance is like the new hot area.
Like D&O insurance.
Yeah, all of that stuff. Anything a business needs, that's something we cover.
So how did you get into this? Where'd you come up with this idea?
So I used to be an insurance claims attorney doing surety bond claims. Oh, God, I'm boring myself just talking.
I was
going to
say, that sounds like a fast lifestyle, man.
It was actually really cool because it was construction projects, right? Which sounds kind of boring, but like I would go in and figure out what happened, why they went wrong. And so like Hurricane Katrina, I was one of the first lawyers to go in there and try to figure out, did the water go under or over the levees, right? So actually construction, big, massive construction projects are really interesting because something usually goes horribly wrong.
The water went under the levee, then that was okay. But if it went over, it wasn't?
No. If it went under, it was not okay because that means it was a man-made disaster because the water would have gone under there's like steel boards or whatever, steel boards, put into the ground. So if the water went under, it means it went under the steel and up and then scoured the back, and then the whole thing fell down. That's man-made. So then the insurance companies would have been on the hook. Whereas over the top, that just means it was a natural disaster. The water got so high that they just didn't build high enough.
And they absolutely don't want it to find out it went under the board.
They didn't. They never actually got to that spot because they decided that the federal government was responsible, and you can't sue the federal government.
So you sue God.
You sue no one.
Wow.
I'm going to sue God.
Good luck with that.
Different episode, bro.
Okay, different episode.
That's a TV show, I think.
Yeah, maybe. So, all right. Wow.
Man, you guys just... So anyways, just to connect Risk Genius to doing that claims nonsense. So then I was like, you know, claim documents are a total mess. I need to fix that. So initially we did a scanning company, basically, to go out to construction sites and scan documents, collect electronic data. And then the bug bit, I didn't even know what was going on, to be honest with you. But I was like, oh, we could just build software to manage this whole thing because the software we're using to manage all these documents sucks. So hired an outsourcing team to do this. That was a disaster. And then from there, a carrier called us and was like, hey, could we use your software? This is many years forward. Can we use your software to review policies? And that's when we kind of uncovered this problem that was we're solving.
An accidental find. And some that's sometimes those are the best ones. And okay, so when it comes to, you know, you mentioned a lot of things, machine learning, AI, stuff like that. So you're looking for patterns in these policies. I mean, what are some of the things, like, so obviously you want to help someone make money, save money, blah, blah, blah. Is this it more about like trying to help them avoid errors that then result in liability?
Yeah. I mean, at a high level, yes. What we're using the machine learning for is to spot patterns in the document so we can break out the clauses, and then also spot patterns in the clauses so we can then determine what the contents are, so we can then categorize it. We have this like taxonomy that we use to do all the categorization, and that really is kind of the value of our software, because then it categorizes everything in a similar fashion across all the different carriers, because they write all the policies differently. So like one person might say, hey, we cover your roof unless a windstorm occurs, and another carrier may say, if the wind exceeds 150 miles per hour when it rips off the roof, then you're not covered, right? And being able to identify that those are the same thing, that's the key.
That sounds like fun.
I was watching something about this. So, you know, on HBO, you know, Vice News has a ongoing, you know, news thing, and they also do some special reports. But they did one recently about how artificial intelligence and machine learning are changing the workplace. Mm-hmm. And there was actually a company that they profiled that did some stuff similar to this, but for like legal things. Like you look at like how much time, all right, at Full Scale, we spend a lot of time messing around with MSAs.
Oh God. Yeah.
You know, and it's it's just a pain in the butt.
Yep.
And that was actually, it was actually an NDA that they used for the example, and there was some platform that had, you know, AI for that. Then it had gone through, and, you know, because it had scanned a gazillion things and had a ton of stuff, it was able to recognize certain things that might pop out. So they did the good old John Henry test, you know, man versus machine.
Oh, interesting.
And it beat the human lawyer, who also took four times longer.
Yeah. When, I mean, this all started, in my opinion, like around the discovery space, where like, if I sue you and say, give me all your documents, somebody has to go through those. Mm-hmm. And so eventually they're like, this doesn't make sense to review a million pages. Let's use machine learning and have a human review 1,000 and code them as to what's relevant and good and what's not relevant or bad. And then take that seed set and then feed the whole model through that and see what comes out as a result. And so actually that's what I saw starting to emerge in the legal practice. Where I was working, I was like, oh shit, my work's going away. Are we allowed to curse?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So saw my work going away.
Does that make you feel better there?
Maybe not. No. Yes. I know my kids can't listen to this now.
My 2-year-old dropped an F-bomb last night. Oh, yeah. So yeah, maybe it's from listening to the podcast.
My 5-year-old likes to go up to people now and go, I know the D word. And they're just like, and I'm always, when I first started, I was like, oh, where is this going? This is trouble. And then he'll just go, damn it.
Damn it.
Because he can barely say it.
That's funny.
What happened with me was apparently my 2-year-old may have said it. And then my 4-year-old started yelling. Caden yelled, OF, OF. And so then I had 2 kids. Yeah. And, you know, yeah. I
should just make this a kids podcast.
I shouldered that would be terrible. I shouldered the liability on that one. So, okay. So for the, you obviously employ software programmers, but do you also have to have a bunch of people around that are like, that understand that you have like, what is that? Is that an analyst? Is that?
Yeah. We call them policy analysts. Okay. So we actually have a team here. We also have a team in India.
Okay.
That are literally going through and reading new policies and finding data and categorizing that. And a lot of the work that they have to do is around making sure they're not going outside the bounds of what to call stuff, right? So like last year, we realized that our index of how we categorize all these clauses got really messy. Basically, the data integrity got screwed up. And so we had to go back and clean that up. And it took 2 people like 7 months to do that. It was painful.
Was that just terms?
It's like, example would be like, imagine you have a definition of food. So we call that definition-food. But then somebody else creates a clause that's like definition, you know, this policy covers food, including fruit, but not including water, right? So somebody made the mistake and called that definition-food and fruit. And so now you have a new category, even though it should just be definition of food. So then you have to go back and clean that stuff up.
It sounds fun.
I mean, I actually remember when we first started and I would be reviewing clauses in an Excel spreadsheet until 4 a.m. in the morning, like every night for a long time. And then like passing that to the developers and then they'd upload the CSV file and we'd see if it worked better. So
it's a lot of remapping and remapping of data.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'd be classifying data.
We had to do that like eight or nine years ago when we built the ticket site that was like generating itself. And it would, so we, 9 years ago, I built a you know, handling all this event data that came in and, you know, building web pages as new stuff came in and other stuff came out. And like 9 years ago, that's not high technology now, but 9 years ago, no one else was doing that. And we would all, it would often go haywire for those same reasons. Yep. Like, you know, you'd have like Justin Bieber and then another listing would be like Justin Bieber and the following acts. And the next thing you know, we would have like 10,000 Justin Bieber pages because the freaking server went haywire or something. Yep. You're talking about auditing like goofy little lists that only I felt like I would figure out and someone else didn't, or good stuff like that. So did
you? Yeah, I was going to say, so I don't know if you mentioned this a minute ago, but the, what your company does now versus what it did when you first started is a little different, right?
Yep.
So can you talk a little bit about that journey and kind of maybe how you, I guess we described it as a pivot along the way or just kind of how the business has evolved.
And and also if you, and with that, if you're able to give us any, or the listeners, any info about, like, we like to talk about the pitfalls and the things that you didn't, like, you don't know that you didn't know something until you're like, oh, wow. And you never saw it coming.
Yep. So I think one of the rules now that I have in my head from the past is always pivot hard, right? And I tell that people often. I tell that to people often. So going back, we started in 2012 and we came right out of the chute with a lot of revenue because we had a big carrier customer. And so that was great. Like, but the business model sucked and I didn't realize it at the time, which was basically deploy people onto a construction site, scan documents with local labor and take all those documents that are now electronic and upload them to a software application for people to review them. Pretty simple. It would have been a nice little business, frankly, like still be doing that without a doubt. But I decided, okay, we got one customer doing this. All we need is like 10 more and we're just rolling, right? Now we've got lots of revenue coming instead of that. What I didn't realize is that customer was not going to replicate very easily. And so we did a round, fundraising round in like 2014 based on the model of replicating, you know, what we had built with that one customer. It didn't replicate. And so in 2015, when we needed cash and we also had a customer, like I mentioned, come to us and say, hey, can we use your software for policy review? I'll never forget, actually, we pitched an investor that night or I went to pitch an investor that night, an existing investor. And I was like, I told the story that the claim document solution was doing fine. It would continue to go well and build and grow. But hey, we also have this other thing that's going to do policy checking. And it looks pretty amazing. And there's a lot of demand for it, even though we haven't even built it yet. It was a terrible approach, right? Because, well, looking back, it was a bad approach because it's a muddled, messy message. I should have just, and so the next morning I woke up and I had to go present at 1 million cups.
Okay.
Right? And the presentation was on pivot. Like, I remember waking up that morning really in a bad mood because the night before had gone poorly with these investors. And I was like, pivot. I was like, huh, that's interesting. So I just made some slides very quickly that morning about why we're pivoting. Right. It was like, all right, here's what I saw with the claim kit, the claim document solution. Here's what we see with this new thing. And the key is demand. There was just tons of demand for Risk Genius. There was not a lot of demand for claim kit. And so went in and presented. And from then on, I just presented the Risk Genius story. Didn't even bother talking about claim kit. And things went a lot better after that.
There you go. It's amazing sometimes that the things you learn along the way that, you know, if you never would have done claim kit, you never would have got to Risk Genius, right? So that's the amazing part of this is it's like one step at a time and you don't know what the final steps and journey is. You keep learning one step at a time. And then at some point in time, you figure out you need to pivot a little this way or a little that way. And
I was just talking about that last night or yesterday at the Royals game with someone about, you know, it's weird because my story, it definitely the last 10, 12 years all ties together because, you know, I hired my first employee in Cebu City in 2009. And at some point it would have been easy to let them go because we weren't doing some of the same stuff, but we hung on, we let them figure out how to do new stuff. And that became pretty damn useful when we opened full scale and expanded last year. And you talk about all these little goofy things where if you'd gone right rather than left, you're like, would my life be dramatically different?
Because we all have those
really
moments.
Really, really could. Okay. So we heard pivot hard.
Yep.
And you know, I think that's obviously a buzz phrase or a lot of people talk about it. And you know, what do you think are a couple indicators that you need to pivot? Just in general.
Yeah. So there's just one basically, right? Which is demand. Like I will never forget trying to get people to pay attention to claim kit, cold emailing attorneys, like, cause I read, you know, all the sales books on how to generate leads and that stuff. So I'm, you know, emailing hundreds of lawyers a day, getting maybe one or two that'll do a demo. And then they get on, they're like, no, thanks. Whereas, so that was the first thing. And then there's Risk Genius where I'll never forget we had just hired a salesperson and an article ran calling us the Google of insurance policies, which is insane to start with. Like I didn't even expect that. And that article just came out. And then all these leads just started coming in, right? Brokers and carriers saying, what are you doing? We're interested in what you're doing. And I just remember pausing and being like, this is different. This is completely different. And until you get, I think it's really hard. A lot of times people want to build a solution because they think they can build the demand afterwards. And I think that's a mistake. You have to like find that really horrible pain point where people are demanding the solution and then go build it. And it's obvious, but I didn't understand it the first time around. So find tremendous demand from lots of people that are willing to pay money.
If you build it, they will come is not a thing.
No,
it's not. But that sounds a lot like the full scale story. You know, like Matt and I had a different intention. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden we're like sitting there going, wow, there's like this insane demand for this. Like when people are beating down your door and they're like, I need help.
Yep.
We have problems. Help me fix this. Like that's listening to the marketplace and like understanding opportunity. And now are there other people that do what Risk Genius does?
Yeah. One of them is this company, they're called Exari. And so they're based in London, came out about 10 years ago. And so instead of using machine learning to try to categorize all this information, they like hard code in their best guess, essentially, right? So like, imagine I tell you, hey, I need you to predict what this clause will, or I need you to be able to predict and identify all the war exclusion clauses, right? And then you trying to write rules around that is tricky. So that's,
I mean, you guys are doing more natural language processing type stuff.
Yeah. yeah, we're just feeding it lots of examples.
Yeah.
We like to define things. What is natural language processing?
It's anything that, you know, where a computer can read text and have an idea of what the text means, you know,
the context of it.
Yeah. There's great things. There's all these weird different rules and business uses for this stuff. And Risk Genius is obviously one of them, but there's things, for example, that'll read through news articles and then decide, okay, what is a news article about?
Yep.
What is the summary of this article, the headline of the article? Like, is it positive? Is it negative? Is it about Donald Trump? Like, what is it about?
That's kind of low hanging fruit at this point.
Right? Yeah. That's pretty basic sort of natural language processing.
So what's a,
you will be using natural language processing to go through resumes in the next 5 years without a doubt. I'm
ready to move that timeline up.
I mean, there's technology already out there doing it, right?
Yeah, no. And it's interesting how much, you know, so many of our guests, the companies that they founded are running, and so many of the things I love workflow automation. Mm-hmm. I just think it's amazing. And it, especially when it takes out shit that no one, let's be realistic. Are there even 5 people on this planet that are like, yeah, I get to read insurance policies all day?
There definitely are, actually.
Are they?
Oh, absolutely.
Lawyers that make $500 an hour.
No, they have to. They enjoy making $500 an hour. They don't enjoy reading a policy. There's a difference there.
I mean, there's insurance nerds that the people that
there's a guy somewhere that's like, man, my kids are out of town. Wife's absolutely out of town. I'm dropping the kids off at my parents' house, and I'm going to stay home tonight and read insurance documents.
I mean, that's kind of an extra. Do you go recruit on a Friday night when you're?
I have.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have, but that's not your preferred means.
Maybe. I did. By the way, it's really funny he brings that up because that is actually what I did last Friday night. Yeah. I just had an opportunity. I have a weird schedule. So Friday night for me
is always when your hobby is making money, you just never stop working.
I know. I have not worked
a day since. You guys are such hustlers.
it's funny.
Welcome to the startup hustle.
He says that, but I say that a lot because, you know, you talk about training your own mentality to do certain things. And, you know, I'm on wife 2 right now, but both named Jill. So Jill 1 that was my first wife. She wanted me to get a hobby, and I tried all different kinds of stuff. And I just came to the conclusion. I was like, man, I really like making money. I'm just going to let that be my hobby. And I tell people I haven't worked a day since.
I'm still stuck on the 2 Jills because it reminds me, I used to date multiple Jessica. I dated 3 Jessicas in a row.
Yeah.
And it was very helpful because as soon as I stopped dating a Jessica, actually my current wife, Melissa, she went to meet my family. And my mom slipped and called her Jessica, and that was awkward.
It's awkward for people not necessarily now, but people that had met my first wife, Jill, and then after we broke up, met the other Jill, but weren't we've been together for 10 years. So this is, we were just talking the other day, Facebook was 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yep.
And people just weren't as informed about, now I know everything about, I know what you had for dinner last night, maybe, unfortunately.
Ooh.
Yeah. My wife thinks you're trying to start a cooking show, by the way.
I'm working on it.
And
are you still doing the keto thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I know about
it. Absolutely.
I blew the keto diet up last night. I slept. I went to open what I thought was a keto-friendly ice cream bar, and then it was shaped like Mickey Mouse. And I was it was shaped because it had the solid white package, and I thought it was mislabeled. We're talking about bad labels. Yeah. And I opened this thing up, and
it was the label's fault.
It was totally. So, but who am I to waste a Mickey Mouse chocolate covered ice cream thing? My kids are already in bed. So I ate it.
Yeah.
And then that was a slippery slope, guys. It went downhill really fast from that. So, okay. Have you started other businesses before this? You said you were in the insurance business.
Oh, dear Lord. you could go to CheathamConsulting.com. There's a website.
It's still online.
So that was actually, there's a couple things I did before Risk Genius, because I was a lawyer, right, at a big firm. But then after that, because I was really sick of billable hours, actually 2 things happened.
God, I need to meet more lawyers like that.
Yeah. Well, billable money's
I get it.
So
I meant needing them to care less about billing my hours.
Yeah. So when I was a lawyer, though, I remember looking around at the law firm I was at, right? And I was like, wait a second, there's 50 or 100 construction lawyers here, and they all do the same thing. And I'm supposed to bring in customers to make partner. How is that going to actually happen? that doesn't make any sense. It felt like a lottery, essentially. I think one of the jokes I told someone was the best way to become partner is to befriend the oldest partner and hope he dies.
It's not a bad approach.
Yeah. And so,
I mean, is that, do they like hand it off like that?
Oh, yeah.
So they're like, hey, I'm not going to be the partner. It's been a great life, but I'm out. Chris, you're the partner now. Is that really how it went?
Yeah. Well, no, that's not how it went for me, but that's how it goes.
But that's how, okay.
Yeah. So
interesting. It's a strange dynamic.
Yeah. So I decided I needed to kind of make a name for myself. So I started, that's when I kind of got into marketing, which is really my true kind of passion in all this stuff. So started writing about green building law. Right. So, you know, green buildings LEED and all that stuff. No one was really talking about the legal implications. So I was like, I'll do that. And so
you say of weed?
What?
Green what?
Green buildings.
Yeah.
LEED.
Oh, I think it's LEED. I think we're talking about green buildings. Like, and I thought I heard weed.
Yeah. Like buildings made out of weed.
It's Friday night. What am I going to say?
Yeah. Buildings made out of weed.
They might be soon. Who knows?
And so started writing a lot about that and started getting lots of speaking stuff, and it just kind of blew up. And I was like, and didn't make any money, frankly, but it was like, oh, this is how you create a name. Like, I kind of started understanding marketing and branding. And so, after we did that, you're picking out a card, aren't you? You're going to ask me a question off of a card.
No.
It scares me. Yeah, I coined the phrase litigation. This is where I wanted the story to go.
I love invented words. Yes. Litigation.
Litigation. Everyone
started. Add that to the vocabulary episode.
Lawyers started using it. They asked me if they could use it. I'd be like, I didn't trademark this. Then I tried to trademark it. Almost got sued. So that was intense.
So you didn't invent it?
I did invent it, but you can't trademark a word that's already been trademarked. Mm. It was a derivative word.
I see.
Yeah. So anyways, I like marketing. So.
So at Risk Genius, especially early on, did you take on or do you still take on a lot of the sales stuff?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm the only sales guy and I'm the only marketing guy at this point.
I know how that feels.
Yeah. And our secret weapon is I have 150,000 followers on LinkedIn and they're all insurance people.
Wow. 150,000.
Yeah.
Well, you're out of connections at that point. So they have to just follow.
You. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow.
How did you get that many?
So,
no doubt.
I think I had like a New Year's resolution to like start writing on LinkedIn more one year. I think it was like 4 years ago. And so I started doing it every other day, just posting something about insurance. There's a lot of insurance tech innovation stuff going on. So just started writing about who's doing what. And then I got an email from LinkedIn and they're like, hey, we noticed you're posting about insurance a lot. We're about to release our app where we're going to recommend people to follow. Would you like to be the insurance person?
Oh, wow.
I was like, I actually didn't believe him. I was like, sure. Yeah, I'll see this.
And grand then, slam.
Yep.
So I feel like this is that moment when, you know, we joke, you say, yeah, I want that third comma. And then Sandy Kemper comes in and talks about the $1 trillion that C2FO sends around the world. And we're like, dude, you got to come in here with your fourth comma. I thought I had a lot of connections on LinkedIn with just over 20,000, 150,000 followers. It's a lot, especially when it's topical. So... So in the sales and marketing part though, so, you know, I do a lot of the sales for Full Scale, as you're aware. But I'm not scalable. Mm-hmm. And so our business has been growing fast. Yours is growing fast. Is that something that you'll have to address going forward?
I was like literally just working on it this morning. Right.
Do you have the same problem I have? It's like, I know I'm a good salesperson and I know that I handle it the way I would want it handled. Yep. And that makes me really distrustful. And I say distrustful, just meaning like I really have to see a lot out of a salesperson.
Yeah.
Cause our product is a little different. It's like, you know, like some of the things that we're talking about earlier, it's like, you know, the way that you're handling some of the objections is not just intuitive.
I agree. And it's the wrong thinking. Right. Like I have the same thing. Like,
so the wrong picking,
the wrong thinking.
Like, oh, I agree. Yeah. Like, it's totally flawed, but yeah. I'm just saying it, but it's natural.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Yeah. Like I was literally on a call with this guy this morning from some consulting company and he's like, oh yeah, it's the founder led sale. Yeah. That's not scalable. I was like, oh yeah. So you're basically talking about founder led sales. Right. And so what you have to do then is remove yourself from the process. The way I'm kind of thinking about doing it is doing like I'm really interested in the part-time CSO role, right? There's some interesting companies starting to emerge that do like chief sales officer on a part-time. We don't necessarily.
Stackify used to do that.
Oh yeah.
We did. Yep.
Was it successful?
Yeah. Yeah, it's good.
Cool. And then hiring salespeople, because that CSO, that initial part-time CSO, can just help you get your processes in place.
Right. Yep. Right?
That's what I'm looking for.
Is that
for.
What they did for you, Matt?
Yeah, that's what they did. Yeah.
Cool.
Yep.
And then, he still comes around to help continue to train like the new team.
Cool.
Is that Dan?
Yeah, his name's Dan.
Yeah, we can give him a shout out. He's a local consultant.
Dan O'Reilly.
Yeah, Dan O'Reilly. He does a lot of work. He does a lot of sales training stuff too.
Mm-hmm. That is a good dude.
Yeah, Dan's a good guy.
Yeah, the one I'm talking
about. Do you know Dan?
No, I do not.
Okay.
Intro might be good.
Yeah.
There's a guy named Chris Barnett who did sales at iVerify.
Okay.
So he does big enterprise stuff. And so I'm really curious about
The issue I have is, you know, like a lot of our clients are big.
Yeah.
And that's the thing is like build businesses like ours. And I would assume like Risk Genius, like we're not a high volume
thing.
Like, I mean, meaning like I'm not going to get 50 sales leads today.
Yep. Yep.
So when they come in, like dropping that ball is really quite expensive.
Yep.
But yeah, well, we've hired some salespeople sometimes successfully and started moving forward. And that's a process. It's a learning process. And then also too, it's also kind of like networking. Cause I think that Matt, you and I get a little spoiled about some of the access that we can gain. And then we're like seeing a sales guy. We're like, wait a minute, you're still talking to this person. Like, why aren't you talking to the CEO? And literally heard, cause I'm not you. They're not going to just pick up the phone or, you know, something like that. Or it's a little easier for you or Matt to reach these folks. And, you know, it's some of that's just trying to consider that. So what do you think, because I do believe you're a great salesperson. What makes you, what helps you sell? By the way, we spend a lot of time talking to people and they're like, yeah, I need to raise money. I need to do this. I need to do that. I'm like, you could sell something too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, what drop some knowledge
on how to sell?
Sure. Just something simple. Like for example, the one thing I tell people first off and foremost is to know that people buy the benefits of your product. They don't care about the features. They care about what the benefits of it are. But dude, so many people don't do that. And then obviously the probably golden rule is you got to ask people to buy things.
Yeah.
And like, there's nothing wrong with
that. I suck at that, to be honest with you.
I've made it so simple. I'm like, when do you want to get started? Or do you want to go ahead and get this? Or, you know, just something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think most demos suck. Right. Like most demos just are really bad
because there's focuses on the features
on the product.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about the product.
Like, what does this do for me?
Yeah. What problem are you solving for me? Yeah. Right. And so I try to talk as much in terms of problems and solutions instead of software. So,
and that's benefits.
Yeah. That's about it. I mean, it's as simple as that. But then like,
you love it when we talk about sales, Matt. Look at Matt's
face.
If all of the listeners could see Matt's face right now, he's like, come on, I want to talk about technology. What?
I like sales.
I know you like
when seeing you sell them technology.
Come in. Yes. Yeah. Well, I mean, we're talking about that. But I think it's so important because there's, you know, you look at the history of products in general and mediocre products that are marketed and sold well
makes me so mad sometimes.
I mean, wasn't the VHS like tape like significantly crappier than something like Betamax back in the day? But you know, how was that?
And that's marketing too. Yeah. That's not even sales.
Right.
Like I think that,
well, they go together though. They go together because it's easy to sell something that's marketed well and presented well and whatever.
But it's not easy to, I mean, but marketing doesn't depend on sales. I don't know. I think like for some reason, my favorite book in the world is popping up, which is Positioning, The Battle for the Mind.
Yeah.
And like that.
I've read part of it.
It's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
I like the, I like customer psychology, you know, things that give consideration to it, mainly things that were related to the personality style of whoever you're delivering the message to.
Do you know Grant Gooding?
Yeah.
That is like maybe the best person in town on that stuff.
Yeah, I need to maybe send him an invite to come in here. I was just talking to someone about him the other day, but he's one of my many friends on Facebook that I haven't met in person. But, you know, so, and it's selling things are different, like selling a SaaS product compared to like what you sell. Like,
well, we're SaaS enterprise, right? So there's SaaS, like Stackify's like more transactions, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, so you have products like Gigabook, which might be, customers might pay $20 a month and Stackify might be $500 a month. And then your product might be thousands of dollars a month.
Tens of thousands.
Yeah. I mean, so it's all over the spectrum.
Well, we have both of those too, though. Like something like Gigabook, like I would love to see more enterprise customization. Like here's the whole platform.
Yep.
Now, what do you want us to make it do for you?
Yeah.
Those are obviously a lot more interesting than like $20 a month because you got to stack up a lot of $20 bills. Speaking of which, Matt fired the Supreme Money Gun off earlier.
I did.
And we will be posting a video of that.
Yeah.
There's no way that that video won't be posted prior to this episode coming out. What
the hell are you talking
about? We have a money gun.
Is that a real Supreme money gun? Is it actually Supreme?
Yeah.
How much did you pay for that?
How much did I pay for it?
Yeah.
Not enough. Because it's probably counterfeit, but it is a money gun that says Supreme on the side.
Did Supreme make a real money gun?
They did at one point, but I'm pretty positive that mine is not legit, but don't tell me that. And for those of you that are listening, it is totally not a counterfeit Supreme money gun.
Wow. Supreme is the weirdest thing on the planet.
But we're talking about marketing.
Yeah.
How freaking amazing are they at marketing? They're like, dude, we are going to put our name on anything and everything. They made a brick. Literally a brick once. We were in Vegas and saw one of the stores. It was like $500.
No, there's a guy in our office, Brennan, who like caught me up on Supreme. And now I jokingly have a sticker of Supreme on my monitor. But like,
I'll send you about 40 of them. I have a stack of them because I have a lot of Supreme stuff.
He flips the stuff, right?
Yeah.
So he has like, he bought some weird musical instrument that was like
a melodica.
Yes.
I bought one too, and I gave it to my co-author, Joel Cummins, of the book that I have coming out because he is a keyboardist, and it was really funny. He really appreciated it.
Huh.
A melodica is like you blow through it. It's like a harmonica and a keyboard kind of thing. It's
weird.
It's one of those tolerance instruments. By that meaning, like you have a tolerance for how much you want to hear someone play it. A kazoo, a banjo is a tolerance instrument, an oboe, things like that. But that came out. It was like you could buy the same one that doesn't have the little tiny Supreme thing on it, and it was like $20. I think I paid $79. But I gave it to him, and you know, he had a lot of fun with it. He's going to play that on stage in front of thousands of people at some point, and that'll be fun. That's all fun. Right. So he bought it and flipped it?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So he probably made like 10, 20 bucks or something like that.
I don't know. There's also down in Overland Park, there's a barbershop and they flip Supreme stuff in the corner.
Nice.
Also tennis shoes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's
right up my
You better
alley.
Not know where that is.
It's next to Homer's.
Mine's called the StockX or the Urban Necessities or whoever app. Like there's a lot of cool sellers. So we went to Urban Necessities in Las Vegas and they had a lot of really cool stuff.
Yeah,
and we also went to another store there that just has like Supreme stuff. But I'm a sneakerhead.
I got a fake Supreme shirt in the Philippines for $12.
I know. Then Matt will send it to me and he'll be like, hey, look, I got this for $12. It beats your $100 t-shirt. And I'm like, no, it doesn't. We're going to play mixtape, guys.
All right.
Mixtape. So this is a party game that we have a vested interest in. We're helping them build a digital product.
Cool.
So it's kind of like Cards Against Humanity, but I'm going to read out a scenario and then we're all going to say a song. Now, I feel this is applicable to someone on this podcast. So you better not fucking lose.
All right.
How do you win?
Well, we will vote for each other. It's like whoever's response. All right. It's the first date you've been on in 5 years. What song do you play that captures your excitement?
It's got to be Marvin Gaye. Let's Get It On.
Do you have an answer?
Yeah. Only in Dreams by Weezer.
Blue album. That's a good one.
I've been in a little bit of a mixtape slump, but I'm going to go with Let's Talk About Sex by Salt and Pepper.
Man, we got some good ones here.
I know. So now we have to vote and you can't vote for yourself. So you had Marvin Gaye, Let's Get It On. You had
Only Weezer. Dreams, Weezer.
Okay, so to give you an example, this is a card game, and the issue with the card game, which is a great time, and you can go to mixtapethegame.com, check it out. It's in Target. It's also on Amazon. You're welcome, Joel Johnson. But the digital version, the app, we would be able to play our songs very quickly and easily.
That's so cool.
Yeah, we're really looking forward to this. We've had a lot of fun with this. So now we got to vote. So,
do they need investors?
That might be how we're involved in that.
No, I know.
Yeah, we can help you with that too if you'd like to.
I don't think we can actually do this online. I think we're not supposed to talk about investment opportunities. Sorry, SEC.
Yeah, we're not. We're saying we invested. We invested in Mixtape the Game. We're excited about it. So
it's fun.
Yeah, I'm not allowed to say that when introducing it anymore because Matt told me I'm taking too long to introduce Mixtape the Game. All right, so we got to vote. And I just hate doing this, but I'm actually going to vote for you, Matt.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I'm voting for Matt there. Yours is too obvious.
I know.
All right. I won.
So do you know Matt never votes for me? So,
oh, really?
Well, he's also mad that we, so for a while, you know, this is by the, this is going to be like episode 111, 112, something like that. But Matt's just mad because there's been like 20, maybe even two dozen episodes where I have, I am undefeated at rock, paper, scissors.
I did hear about this. Yes.
I don't, it's actually just the weirdest anomaly because I think we're at the point now that every time I beat you again, and I've retired. I have nothing left to play for.
We did it a couple episodes ago.
Yeah. Well, I bet I won.
Yeah, you won.
Again.
Yeah. But so, I heard your daughter beat you the other day.
2 out of 3.
Yeah.
Which is really funny because I was mad that I didn't videotape that and send it to you to show you that even four-year-olds own me.
Can get lucky sometimes.
I can guarantee I'm going to beat you.
Oh. Let's try it. All right.
I already know what you're doing. Ready? Yeah. 1, 2, 3. Shoot. Yep. I knew it.
He's, you notice his paper is straight up and down because he's kind of cheating a little bit, but I'm going to let him.
How am I cheating? How's that cheating?
He knew it. He knew it. He was like,
no. I went straight into
He this. Won though. I he know. Won. I'm totally defeated.
You lost.
If, for everybody but you, but I'm not going to play you anymore because I've retired from that. I'm retiring again. I'm going back on the shelf, guys. So what's coming in the future for Risk Genius? And we can find you at riskgenius.com.
Sure.
Or Cheatham Consulting.
So Cheatham Consulting is ridiculous because I decided, this was in my early days, and just go look at the bridge metaphor. It's so embarrassing. Yeah. Anyways, and there's a tab I can't get to delete on the WordPress site. What's coming? Yeah, we're hiring a lot of developers, hiring salespeople right now. So if either of those interest you, let us know. And then just scaling, right? That's what everyone does. It's the hustle. I don't know.
Just keep hustling.
I'm trying to beat Zelda on the Switch right now. It's driving me crazy.
Oh, that's fun.
Yeah, it's a good game.
It's a good game.
What did that have to do with all this?
You asked me what I'm doing.
Oh. Oh,
you got to collect all the something another in the shrines. It, right.
By the way, I want to point out, I appreciate your KC fandom, and you're a Jayhawk too, right?
I'm a Jayhawk. Yeah.
I'm wearing so much better to know.
Mahomes jersey, right?
Well, you're a big Royals fan.
Yeah,
I know that. And you know, you came out and watched a game with us.
They're gonna be really good. Took
a picture with Joel Goldberg, which was fun. Joel's nice. Comes by, sweet.
Yep.
You know, for those of you listening to like Joel Goldberg Media or joelgoldberg.com, something like that. But he does really cool public speaking. He's become quite the entrepreneur for that. So he's been quite hospitable with our guests. Speaking of, oh, dude, yesterday's Royals game, by the time we were there with.
Did you see Chris Owens?
Yes. Pitch? Yeah. When they put the backup second baseman into pitch, we figured it was time to go ahead and go.
Yeah. Are you serious?
That's how.
Yeah. And by the way, I throw harder than he does.
Huh. He gave two home runs in like 2 innings.
Yeah.
4 runs.
Walked 4.
Why would we have him pitch?
Because they have another game today. And when you're losing that bad, why even use a pitcher? Like you've just, I mean, it's not uncommon to do that. Like, cause you just want to give your
Royals are going to be good in about 3 years. All right.
For a while, but no, they have some young talent, but the pitching's terrible. I got a shot. I actually, after they put Owens in, I did text Goldberg and told him that I was loose and ready for the ninth inning.
You should go check out the Delaware team, the Blue Rocks or whatever.
Yeah. They used to come to, when I lived in the East Coast, used to come play in Wilmington, North Carolina.
I'll never forget. I have a friend that works at the Royals. So he was like, you got to come see this team. And so go out there and see Salvador Perez when he's in the minor leagues and Hosmer and Moustakas. And it was like, okay, there's something here. Yeah. And so like, there is a group right there right now that will be like that.
Yeah. It's cyclical.
Yeah.
All right, guys. See you next time.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of Startup Hustle with Matt DeCourcy and Matt Watson. For more great content and to stay up to date, visit startuphustle.xyz. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and subscribe. And we'll catch you next time on Startup Hustle.